walking straight into like waves of dudes. Just hey.
Yeah, if there's one trope that needs to die, it's the waves of opposition.
Yeah.
It is unbelievable how many people you murder in any one of these games. Granted, they're coming at you, but unbelievable amounts of people are dead at the end of these games.
I have to think that this is a thing where, like, it's just padding. Just sit here and pop and or stop and pop at these guys until you move on.
And it made sense, like, when the padding was turtles you jump on in Mario. But
like
when it's
in RE4. Okay, yeah, there's a bunch of cultists and zombies. Okay, there's a bunch of those guys.
That also explains why they don't retreat.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
These soldiers just come at you wave after wave of bodies piling up. Like, this is the Russian army in World War II. Just pick up someone else's gun. Just go out there. Die.
And you hate to make a joke from, like, a Penny Arcade comic, but I'm about to make a joke from a Penny Arcade comic. There's nothing worth, whatever these guys are doing, it's not worth walking into you. There's absolutely nothing worth it.
Especially at Spec Ops.
I will give Spec Ops a benefit because it actually does do a very decent job of pushing the war is hell angle. Like, for all the generic crap that game can be in gameplay, the story and tone is actually really good.
I don't know, I haven't played the game, but okay, yeah, they just shot a missile at these guys, right? But it's like, it kind of takes the impact out of it.
But he ducked under the missile, so they'll be fine.
Yeah, so it's fine, yeah. It takes the impact out of war as hell when you're basically invulnerable. It's like, okay, you took a bullet to the torso, just hang out for a couple of seconds, you can keep going. It's just war is something that happens to other people. It's not something that actually happens to you. You don't actually have to, like, pay attention to a lot.
A torture room with 10 dead bodies fails to leave an impact when you just killed 50 to get into it.
Yeah.
One of the really good things the game does is, like, as you go through the game, the people you, like, at the beginning of the game, your partners are just like, hell yeah, let's shoot some dudes. They're making jokes, all that stuff. Like, every time you need to reload, you yell, reloading. And then later in the game, everyone's getting pissed off. They're seeing a lot of, they've killed a bunch of people. No one's happy anymore. And, like, you don't even scream reloading anymore. You're just screaming fuck at your gun really loudly.
At my gun.
Yep.
That's how it fires. Connect, fire gun, fuck! Xbox, shoot, shit!
Alright.
So have you been actually playing Spec Ops: The Line, Emerald?
Yep.
On what? On 360, I assume?
No, PC.
Oh, that's right. I guess it's out on that, isn't it?
It also got, like, massively discounted in a day. Like, half price.
On Steam, or?
It's a Steamworks game, so anywhere you get it.
Oh, that's pretty neat.
Yeah.
Nothing goes on sale on Steam anymore. You got through the Amazon sale, right?
Where did I get it? I got it at Green Man.
Nice.
Because they were having a, like, 24-hour sale on it.
That's pretty nice.
So this is Beardcast 92.
Yes, this is episode 92 of the Nitro Beard Beardcast. It's July 2nd at 8:40 p.m. 2012. I'm Brian Belita.
I'm Imran Khan.
I don't
really
want
Matt and Mark. You guys are so indecisive. Come on, just let you go.
I don't want to be the guy to talk over Matt. I don't want to be that rude. And I'll wait.
I'll talk over you now.
Yeah, there we go.
Yeah. I was doing that to a coworker today. I felt so bad. I'm like, oh, you're just like Mark. I'm Matt Pierce.
And I'm Mark Bradshaw.
German currency.
But never be the first person to sit down. So we're already shooting the shit about Spec Ops and some other things. You been playing much else other than Spec Ops? I mean, I know you did your... Wait, no, that's right. You did your The Amazing Spider-Man Wii stream.
Yeah, that game is shit. Like, so for the HD version, they made this big open world, and for the Wii version, they didn't. So they just cut off all the open world stuff and put in the rest, and it makes no sense. Like, it cuts out complete amounts of context and, most importantly, tutorials of things you need to know.
Nice.
So what is it? You're just going, like, from room to room to room as the story dictates? Or how does that work?
Oh, great. And then occasionally you go back to the apartment of Spider-Man's friend Stan, which, haha,
Stan. Ah, Stan, get it.
Yeah.
Get it. So and was it better than the last Spider-Man game? Which was
I don't think so.
Like,
I think it's a bigger piece of shit. I think that the last Spider-Man game was like really rushed, but at least it was rushed equally on everything, and it was
now which more one? Fun. Shattered Dimensions.
Last one was Edge of Time.
Oh, that's right. Shattered Dimensions, then Edge of Time. That's right. Okay.
Right. And the one before that was Web of Shadows. They put these things out.
Yeah, they're kind of guilty pleasures for me.
I like Spider-Man games, but don't get the
I really like Spider-Man games too.
Because I think Spider-Man, it's the best chance. Like, Batman games are great, but no one's hit that same epiphany for Spider-Man yet.
Right.
Like, what, they did open world.
That would be fantastic if that happens. If Spider-Man gets the Batman Arkham Asylum treatment.
But it's going to take, like, a good developer to do it, and not just, like, okay, you're the guys who make Spider-Man for the next 7 years.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Well, I know Justin McElroy from Verge or the Vox Games, Polygon, whatever you want to call it. He did a little write about it, about how he enjoyed The Amazing Spider-Man. But then one of the things he touched on was the swing mechanics. And this is something that really, I don't know, hit close to me. I mean, not really close for any emotional reason, but it was just something that I thought about. Because there are basically two different versions of the swinging in the Spider-Man games. And one is where Spider-Man can just swing through the air, literally.
Yeah.
Literally, he's just anchoring. Maybe his web becomes a hang glider when he shoots it straight up, but you were just unhindered and you can swing no matter what. And then the other one, which I think, did Spider-Man 2?
Spider-Man 2, PS2 added that, that you have to, like, connect to something.
Right, you actually had to, kind of be below a building, and you had to actually latch onto a building. And if you were even kind of up high and just close to the top of it and you connected to it, it would obviously start pulling you to the side because you were connected to the top of it. And I really liked that. Maybe it was just the fact that it was kind of real and an actual thing, and I didn't go, oh, I'm just swinging above Central Park somehow.
There's the rafters above, like, New York City just constantly. I don't know if that's
right.
It's like Truman Show.
A giant skybox. I mean, yeah. But, I really wish that they had gone back to that.
Weird, like, that they didn't do that, though.
Because I feel it is kind of weird, because they were kind of like, yeah, we're doing fucking this and this, and it's awesome, but you can swing from the air. But, I don't know everything. I didn't really follow the development.
I guess it probably involves a more complicated physics engine than they want to bother with.
Maybe probably. If there's, like, a space elevator type effect in play, where, like, if you shoot it up high enough, it basically, like, goes into orbit. And your webs just hang out there because they're in orbit around the Earth. Like a space elevator will stay in place just based on gravity.
Spider-Man is actually swinging from the moon?
No. He's just firing so far out up that it enters orbit. Like, you just have this web. The stream is in orbit around the Earth. And, it just hangs out there. Have you seen how space elevators work?
Mark?
Space
I'm going to need you to go ahead and make a video game for me. Just anything. Just whatever you want to do, just make that game, because I want to play it.
Seriously, do you know what a space elevator is?
I do, yes.
All right, so it works on the same concept. You just fire it so far up into space
that
it just hangs out
there. Zero G latches onto it. That makes sense.
Yeah. It's okay. Just out there.
I'm okay with this.
It seems like it would just be easier to hit a building, though.
Yeah, it's way easier to hit a building,
But anyways, I mean, It would be great. It would be fantastic because I understand, they did play testing and design by committee, and people are giant babies and they're just like, I don't want to have to do this. But it would have been awesome if they had the option, real TM swinging or real swinging trademarked, or air swinging.
Spider-Man swinging should feel like parkour.
Right, exactly. It should feel like you are actually, it's a challenge to learn. Like, there's an actual learning curve.
Feels like there should be a lot of momentum and weight behind it.
Right.
You can't really do that if you're just swinging in the sky.
Right. It can't just be you're traveling at the exact same speed because you're swinging through the air. But they've done some really neat things. I mean, they did
the
whole... The
problem with Spider-Man swinging, though, is that if they base it off of physics, you'd just be pulling yourself into buildings.
Yeah.
I'm okay with that. It would be fun to just smack into buildings until you learn how things work.
Oh, now I learn...
Unless he's turning a corner, there's literally no way he could ever hit the bottom of his swing. Because on the way back up, he just smashed into the building.
Well, I think the way you could make it work is if you had like a few landmark buildings that you know you'd always like hitch your web onto. Like every block, there's like one landmark building that's like taller than the rest, and you just like attach to that. My question would be,
I'm going to start a petition to get Fadi, the maker of such great games as Quap and GURP, to be the designer on the next Spider-Man game swinging mechanic.
Yeah, here's the real problem with the Spider-Man swinging and like him attaching it to buildings and such. It's like, despite what you like see in like television stuff, Manhattan isn't just completely full of skyscrapers, right? There's like two or three sections just has skyscrapers in them, and like in between there's like smaller buildings, like two or three stories high, or like parks or roads. So like you could swing in between, like, I don't know, like in the financial district, and you could swing in like Midtown. What the hell do you do in between there?
Parkour.
Parkour.
Where you just make for an awesome, awesome game.
Yeah.
Oh well.
Just switch to first person Mirror's Edge mode, except supercharged.
Except a good Spider-Man game.
See, I think Spider-Man's biggest problem is that you have to be in Manhattan. You can't really set a Spider-Man game anywhere else. And Manhattan is boring at this point.
Because everyone's done it.
Yeah, everyone's done it. I mean, even Prototype was apparently in Manhattan, but fuck if I knew.
Where is this game? I don't know. But anyways, so I really like Spider-Man games, even just swinging around. And they've done some neat things like the whole, I don't know what they call it, but the fast travel thing where you can enter first person, it slows down time, pick a point to go, and then go kind of fill in the blanks. Web rush.
What if you,
thank you.
What if he just, like, lands on top of a car and just, like, hangs out until he gets to a next place? That could work.
That would be neat. If you just, like, aimed at a point 3 miles away.
You can do that at Infamous, and what I would do is I would just pick those cars up when I'm done with them and throw them into the ocean.
That's a good idea.
You didn't need this. Well, yeah, I remember a while ago, I think it might have been Spider-Man 2, maybe the first Spider-Man game, I don't remember. But I pirated it for PC.
Like 2600
But I had no idea that it was a completely gimped version. Yeah. I started playing, I was like, what is this?
It was Spider-Man 2, because it was the exact same situation as the Wii game, is they just took out the open world.
Yeah. So I am happy to hear that the actual full game is coming to computer.
Yeah, next month, I think?
Because,
next month, I think?
Yeah, I think so. I remember it was delayed, but it's going to have Steamworks and stuff. I mean, whatever. But mainly because my PS3 is broken.
What's happened to your PS3?
It yellow lighted of death, or whatever it's called. The yellow light of Sony-sama.
YLOD, yeah.
Yes, the YLOD.
Is yellow. That prevalent? Which model is that prevalent to?
That's the original 60 gigabyte model, which is the fully backwards compatible one.
Oh, that's a shame, because there's no way you're going to find another one of those.
Yeah, they're not going to fix that either. Oh, they might fix it.
No, probably not. I did find a company called Endless Electronics, which I've heard some things about. Mostly good, I guess. But they'll apparently kind of upcycle it, or, you know, they have some trade-in deals where they'll take it, and, you know, for like $200 I could, you know, they'll take my old one and send me a new one. So I might just do that. I might just trade up, because I haven't really used the backwards compatibility in a while. Or I may see if I can eBay it, if someone's like, oh, I gotta get that 60 gigabyte model. I don't care if it's dead. I don't know. So I'll see. I'm not too worried about it right now, because I'm playing other things. Yep. But I'm going to play that game, and it's going to be really fun, because I love swimming around, like Spider-Man.
So speaking of licensed games, I started playing Walking Dead this past week. That game is really good. Like,
I almost thought you said Gwalking Dead.
Gwalking
like,
Dead.
Like
or Guacamole Dead?
Yeah.
Guacamole
Dead? No, just Gwalking
Dead. There is a game called Guacamelee.
Guacamelee, all right.
Yeah.
That's pretty,
let's get hold of that game right now.
Right. Yeah, so I keep hearing really good things about it, and I need to do the same. Also, need to finish all the Monkey Island games that I have.
As someone who's played a bunch of Telltale games and didn't really like most of them, like, I liked Back to the Future, but I never got motivated to finish it.
I feel like Walking Dead is a lot different.
Yeah, it's a lot different and it's a lot better. Like, the writing is actually better.
Yeah.
Do you recommend people play the first game, or can you come into this one just dry and
well, you can't. Anything? I don't think you can buy them separately. It has to be the whole season pack.
Oh.
Oh.
Because the way they do it is, I guess, to get around Microsoft certification, is you buy the base game, and then it just downloads the rest whenever they come out.
Ah. So tell us about your experience with The Walking Dead.
Maybe it's because I live in Georgia and thus know most of what they're talking about, but they get a lot of that stuff right.
That's neat.
Which is shocking. Like, they get
seems like there's a lot of good attention to detail from the writers.
The hillbillies right, or the meth right, or what did they get right?
They get the actual news station call signs right.
Oh, wow. That's impressive.
But yeah, it's surprising. Which, I mean, that maybe takes a couple of minutes of research, but that's a lot more than a lot of companies are willing to do.
I should mention that a couple months ago, we had one of the writers for The Walking Dead and at Telltale Games, Sean Vanneman, on the podcast, and you should go listen to it.
Oh, yeah. I remember thinking of that when his name popped out. I was like, that guy was on Nitrobeard once.
That's a cool thing. As we close into 100, I'm going to see if he's would maybe be willing to come back and join us as kind of a thing to do, bring back some old guests. I know Wes and I talked about having Ray Frending come back on for podcasts as we come into 100. So we'll see if we can have him come back on outside of the scope of a podcast interviewing someone else, which would be nice to kind of talk to him about some other things.
If we do that, can we name that segment, You've Got a Friend in Me?
You've Got a Friend in Me? Oh, with Ray.
Yes.
Right, yes.
Because his name is Ray Frending, you see.
Yes, yeah. I get it. So what will we do with Vanneman? What will we do with Sean Vanneman if he agrees to come back on and join us?
Unmarked Vanneman?
I don't get it, but okay.
Because Unmarked Van.
Candy Vanneman?
Because clearly anybody wants, like, associated with pedophiles and...
I get it.
Yes.
Yeah,
play Walking Dead.
Yeah, so play that.
That game is tense and interesting, and I liked it.
That's weird that you're calling an adventure game tense.
Like, I mean, it's basically Heavy Rain.
Okay.
I mean, they've invited those comparisons. It's not a big thing, but, like, it's Heavy Rain, but it's not French and stupid.
Yeah, I'm not sure if that improves matters, so...
Trust me, being French and stupid did a lot to hurt Heavy Rain.
All right.
But I mean, it's mostly just, like, there's a lot of times where I just take my hands off the mouse and keyboard and just watch scenes. But I mean, they'll have stuff that, like, oh, zombie out of nowhere and tap Q, bitch, before you get killed.
Are there, like, multiple endings and stuff? I mean, different, or just kind of different scenarios and stuff that plays out from decisions you've made?
I think occasionally you're asked which of these people you want to save.
Okay.
And, you know, that probably affects things. I don't want to peel back the curtain too much because I think that would be just like the game.
That's fine, yeah.
Yeah. But that's like, cool. Yeah, I don't want to replay an episode and be like, oh, it turns out those choices didn't really matter as much as I thought they did.
Yeah.
So kind of like a Mass Effect game, you want to avoid that situation?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, did anyone actually play the Mass Effect DLC?
No.
Did anyone watch it?
Oh, no. Hold on real quick before we go. I was going to say, it's probably just now because I just became a dad myself, but I'm noticing all these other things. But actually, one of the other writers on The Walking Dead, Gary Whitta, just became a dad today. So there are a lot of gaming babies coming up or something. He used hashtag extra life, which I thought was pretty clever.
Did he name his child Apple?
I don't think so. I'm not sure. Anyways, Mass Effect.
Yes. I didn't watch it.
I still haven't played Mass Effect 3.
Matt?
I watched one ending, the one that's supposed to be a giant middle finger to gamers.
How many endings are there?
There's three still, I think.
The fourth ending, the refusal ending, where you refuse to go along with any of the three choices.
So these
Is
are
that
just
like when like, you don't go this... through the door at the end of Half-Life 1? It's time to choose.
So it's just video, right? You just download like 2 gigs of video, not actual like video game content, right?
From what I understand, there's extra scenes as well. I wanted to actually play it instead of like just watching the video, but the more I hear about it, the more motivation I lose to do so.
Yeah, I'm going to be losing like valuable space to this thing if I actually download it.
Well, it's like 2 gigs of bandwidth, and it's like, do I really care that much about Mass Effect 3's ending anymore? It's been months, and at the time, like, I'm not going to welcome this wife beater back into my life.
Right? It's like, apparently, like, okay, and we're saying this because we've never watched it, so apologies to the viewing audience if we got this completely wrong. It's like, they didn't add anything, right?
They just clarified.
Yeah. So apparently now there's a reason why Joker has left you behind to die. I
feel like they had to do this because they're going to sell DLC, and some of that DLC, they found the traces of it in the Mass Effect 3 ending. Like, apparently there's a Reaper that betrayed the other Reapers that that will join your team.
Oh, that's great compared to what we already know how that game ends.
They need they need to satiate people long enough for them to buy the DLC.
Which is just weird because if you're getting the DLC, and because you know the DLC starts, all the DLC I guess is going to start right before you head out to the main Cerberus, the main Cerberus camp.
I'd assume so.
Yeah, so you already know how the game ends. There's nothing you can do to change that, and they're just shoving more stuff in between that point and the end of the game. So there's no like massive revelations that this game can like throw at you, because you know it's going to end, and it's going to end badly for everyone involved. So I don't understand the point of having DLC like this, you know, or just like, I don't know, it seems weird.
Well, I think they're doing it because Mass Effect 2's DLC sold well. So,
yeah. Oh, no, I can understand why you'd have the DLC. It's just like the placement of the DLC in like this kind of universe, because nothing can change. It's not like you're going back and like having the further adventures of Shepard. You're not, because everyone is doomed in very short order.
Do you not remember the exact message they gave you after you finished Mass Effect 3?
Yeah, I do. They say, yeah,
download DLC for the further adventures of Captain Shepard.
Yeah, that's exactly it. So but that's my point. Like, you can't change anything. It's everyone is going to die.
At this point, they're just better off calling Mass Effect 3 done and making a new Mass Effect game. Just make it somebody else. Make it in-universe before or after Shepard saved the world. Universe and done.
It'll be a prequel because the video game industry can't think of new things, so everything has to be prequels. Or, like, stuff shoved in the middle of a pre-existing story. So, I don't know. I don't think I'd be too upset if we got a game that was nothing but, like, The Adventures of Garrus.
No.
I think it'd be pretty great.
That would be fun. Joker's origin story.
Joker's adventure racing.
Yes, oh man.
Yeah, it'd be super realistic because you wreck once, you're dead.
now, a long time ago, let me find the exact date. I put up a list of my top 10 imaginary games, and one of my imaginary games that I would like would be Mass Effect Galaxy Golf. So you hit a ball and you kind of fly to the planet and you hit it again. Maybe you fire it out of the Mako. I don't know.
I could be behind this because you could.
Play a golf game in the Mass Effect universe. I'm just saying.
You could be Legion. Like, you could like hit balls as a robot.
Right. His special power would be, I don't know, logic.
No, he's a robot, so he has a strong arm. That'd be a special power.
Right. Okay.
Yes.
They should make a Mass Effect golf game, but just make it regular golf.
You see?
Like, you just fly down to a planet, and one of the things you can do is go into a side room and play virtual golf on a holodeck. Right. So it's just a regular ass golf course.
What is the shitty arcade golf game that you find in all the bars? Top.
Golden Tee.
Golden Tee. Thank you.
Now wait a minute. Mass Effect takes place like relatively soon after like the events, like only like 200 years in the future, right?
Sure.
So presumably the PGA Tour could still exist.
Cyber Tiger Woods is winning games.
Yeah. I think you just normal ass golf and just like you go between planets. It's not even like virtual golf. It's like go to different planets. You're on a spaceship and you have to like, and you're on adventures, you know, to get your golf crew together.
Right, exactly. You have to assemble a ragtag team of golfers.
Of rebel golfers, you know.
You're the caddy, since you're such a good assassin.
Yeah.
Right. And then there are like terrible golfing injuries that you need to, I don't know, medic yourself. Biotics. Mass Effect Biotic Galaxy Golf. How about that?
As long as I can get Argyle armor.
Okay. Yep.
It's downloadable content. Sorry.
Yep. DLC.
Yep.
Do I get a defense buff with the poofy ball hat?
Oh man. So I would play that. But I probably, man. So is there any compelling reason for me to get Origin and so I can play Mass Effect 3 yet?
Well, you can get Origin so it can hang around in your system tray and like take up 30% of your resources just doing jack all.
So no.
This is what Origin does to me. I turn on the test manager, and it's just like using up 30% of the CPU, just idle. Just
all
hanging
that deal. That's DLC. If you want to, if you want to unlock your processor, pay $5.99.
Yeah. But no, I bought Dragon Age 2 off of Amazon because like $5, and you know I was dared to play Dragon Age 2, so I'm honor bound to play the stupid thing. So I download that, and I download Origin. And I figure, hey, this should be easy. Like Origin, this is an EA game. This Origin thing should be able to seamlessly see that I have Dragon Age 2, and it shouldn't be much of an issue.
Nope.
I download Origin, it just sits there dumbly and says, hey, you don't have any EA games or Origin games. Dup-dup-dup-dup-dum.
So, well, would you like to buy one now? What about now? What about time you start up your computer?
Yeah. So what I did, I opened up Steam, and I said, hey, add non-Steam game. I put in Dragon Age 2 in there, and I put a custom image in so the background looks nice. And now I just play Dragon Age 2 through Steam, and Origin just kind of sits there wondering what's going on.
Technically, the way it's supposed to work is that any game that was released after Origin started up, you can just feed it the CD key, like any Steamworks game, similar to that. Right. But Dragon Age 2 is kind of a hedge case, so you probably have to actually talk to Origin customer support.
Yeah, guess what? Not happening. Absolutely not that important to me. Because anything about putting like non-Steam games in your Steam library is that you can still access your Steam friends list while you're playing your non-Steam game.
How is Dragon Age 2, Mark?
It's the champion!
Hooray!
It does a lot of things that I like, and it's trying desperately to get people to love it. It's like, I kind of like the idea that, you know, it's kind of this intimate setting where you just have one city and you're just hanging out and you're trying to make your way through this city and like just get a bankroll. I like this idea. You're just trying to get a bankroll so you can like get on this expedition so you can like get your mom's house out of pock. I like that story. It's a nice intimate little story, and it's not like the big huge like epic storyline that most of these games have. I understand this about to completely fall apart very soon, but I like what it's doing. The
falling apart would be saying it generously.
I don't want to hear anymore because I want to experience this. Would experience this organically.
There is shit that's going to blow your mind of how stupid it is.
Awesome, so awesome. But the thing that gets me about Dragon Age 2 is, you know, BioWare kept like stripping out things from RPGs until the point that they don't resemble RPGs. What Dragon Age 2 does, it removes your ability to like pick up armor for your party members. Like, your guy has all the armor he could ever want. Like, there are like armor stands, and you can buy armor, but only for your guy.
Yep.
Like, the half dozen other people in your crew that you roll with, nothing.
And only for your class, but you can pick up armor of any kind.
Yeah. So, I play a mage. So, like, I keep picking up this plate armor crap for like, and it says you have to have 17 strength and 16 constitution. Well, I'm never going to do that. That would kill me as a mage. I'm not going to pick that. So, I just have this crap that's completely useless. I can sell it, but why the hell did you tempt me with this? It'd be really great if I hand this over to my actual warrior, but I guess it says on the label that only I can wear it, which is kind of strange.
Yep.
That all these vendors are only willing to sell things specifically to me.
Yep.
It would be great if they added in passive aggressive hints.
Yeah.
That sure is some nice looking armor you've got there.
Yeah,
oh well.
The warrior lady you're hanging out with just looks at it forlornly as she just threw some plate armor back to the vendor. Oh, I need this shit.
Sad walking away music from the Incredible Hulk plays.
See, the thing that gets me about like getting all the other armor is that you have a thing called junk, which is only for stuff you can sell. There's no other purpose for it whatsoever, and you pick all that stuff up and it goes straight to junk. It doesn't do this for armor that you can't equip. It just, for some reason, goes to armor.
Yeah, the whole junk system seems kind of silly to begin with, because it's just there for fluff. You can't interact with this stuff. All it does is take up slots in your inventory, because that still fills up. So the only reason it's there is to be a dick. The only reason it's there is to justify the existence of this other gaming mechanic, which is the slots in your backpack, because otherwise you would never fill up all those slots, because you only need stuff for your guy.
Yeah,
I'm going to say this now. I'm pretty much done with encumbrance in RPGs. If they let me mod it out immediately, that's the first thing I'm going to do.
Can I tell you, though, if they get rid of encumbrance, they've also got to get rid of this whole idea of collecting junk. Because that was one of the most incredibly pointless things in Rage that they took from RPGs. You can collect a lot of stuff that's filed as junk for you to sell. But there's no encumbrance, and there's no limit to the number of things you can carry. So why not just give me money?
So it just hangs out there?
Well, all that stuff just like auto-sell the second you get it.
Yeah. And the problem, of course, was that the mouse pointer in the menus in Rage was completely screwed up. So selling anything was a pain in the ass anyway. So it's like, why not just give me the money? Why not just have everybody carrying money?
Because it's fluff. They can't just, oh, we can't just have people give you two silver. They got to give you this rotten scarf. Well, number one, why did I pick up this rotten scarf? There's a lot of other things in the war that I'm looking at that can probably sell for more than this rotted scarf. Why did I pick this up? It makes no sense.
Yeah.
So what do you think of the Dragon Age 2 cast? Because this is where I frequently get in arguments with people. Because people are like, oh, the cast is really good. It just, the game was rushed.
They're super generic. And
I think they're idiots.
I don't know. I really haven't rolled with them enough, you know, because I'm only I haven't even got to the deep roads yet. Spoilers, but you're building up bankroll so you can get to the deep roads. I'm just building up. I'm just playing the side quests and stuff because mechanically, I like BioWare RPG mechanics, like the combat and stuff, and just running around exploring stuff, which is one of my huge disappointments with Mass Effect 3. There was basically no exploration whatsoever. But in Dragon Age 2, you can at least get side quests and sure, the dungeons are super generic, and it's obvious there's three dungeon types and just sharing textures between them.
Deep Roads is the last I think you open.
Yeah, that's what I figured. I forget what I was even saying there.
Building up bank?
Yeah, building up bank to but the crew, I haven't really hung out with them enough. You can see the typical BioWare tropes that everybody's filling out, so that's kind of disappointing.
Well, I'm going to say something that one of the BioWare writers described one of the characters as, and you're just going to nod and agree.
Uh-huh.
She described Meryl as so cute you could glomp her, I just want to giggle squee.
Hang on a second. I got to make sure this is audible.
Yep. That's the writing in a nutshell, and they hired a writer specifically for Anders. That's all she wrote, just Anders. And Anders, by some coincidence, is the worst character in the game by a long shot.
You know, BioWare always has that one character that you're supposed to just instantly be friends with or attached to, and they wind up being the worst person in the entire game. Every single BioWare game has your sidekick, the one you're supposed to bond with, is awful. And they've never realized this in the, I don't know, 15 years they've been making video games. They've never figured this out.
I think it's just that they put so much focus on a single character, and then they think it's great, because obviously they put so much work into him that...
Right.
But it just, you know, no one's going to like this. Only the people who made him will like it. It's a face only a mother could love.
Right. Oh, they're the rabid, BioWare fanboys who can't actually see anything other than love for BioWare.
Yep. I will say that I didn't know you were that early in the game, and it does get better before it gets worse.
Okay. Right now, it's just going through the typical motions of a BioWare game where, you collect your crew, and you unlock, the world and stuff, and then you actually sent out. One thing I have realized about this, you have to get 50 gold in order to start your adventure into the Deep Roads.
Yep.
And one thing I know about BioWare games is that it very meticulously gives out how much gold you can get, because there's only ever so many encounters in the game, so there's only ever so much gold that you can possibly collect. What I'm very specifically trying to do is break this game. I'm trying to buy as much stuff as I can to see if I can bankrupt the game world. Because I have to have that 50 gold.
I think you can go exploring on your own and you can sell parts of monsters you get.
Okay. But it's just, I don't know. Because you go to BioWare for a very specific type of RPG, which I think is why the Old Republic has kind of failed, because that whole massive multiplayer thing does not work with BioWare whatsoever. But it's just, you can see everything coming at this point. And it's like, I play Bethesda RPGs enough, and they they farm out to guys like God, who made New Vegas?
Obsidian.
Obsidian, yeah. And they'll like at least mix it up a little bit, so you can not tell exactly what's going on. And Skyrim mix it up a little bit, but it's like you can tell every single story beat along the way, and it's like they've got a flow chart.
I don't think the problem is predictability, because like Oblivion to Skyrim is predictable, but it's also it improved a lot. Like from Oblivion to Fallout to Skyrim, you get three very similar games that are not at all comparable.
Right.
Because there's no reason to not play all of them if you wanted to get the total experience. With Dragon Age, I mean, if someone asked me, should I get into Dragon Age, I would say, sure, play Dragon Age 1, ignore 2.
Yeah, that's kind of the feeling I'm getting. It's at some point, I'd really like this game to like separate itself from Dragon Age 1. Because right now it feels like an expansion, but it—I don't know. It feels very, very half-assed, very low rent. The stuff they've stripped out is clearly for the sake of like saving the developer dollars.
You didn't import a save file or anything, did you?
No, I didn't, because I'm playing this on PC, The Xbox 360 had the other one.
There was one point where I had a character that I murdered in Dragon Age 1 because I was. You know, I figured why not. And in Dragon Age 2, she appears completely fine. Like, I cut off her head. But she's like, no, me and that guy were just great friends. I'm like, what? Yeah. No.
I'm trying to think if Dragon Age 2 is the exact point where we can start to see, like, BioWare just falling off the map. Because it's, like, with Mass Effect, we were told that our decisions we made 5 years ago would have a massive impact, on the ends of Mass Effect 3. And it had nothing to do with it. And you take a look at Dragon Age 1, and that was a good story. I love that story. I like the characters, even if it was very tropishly BioWare stuff. And with Dragon Age 2, we're told, no, there is a canonical story, and we got to follow that. So, well, that's not what a Western RPG should be. If you're going to make that game, stop making RPGs. Just make the action game you guys want to make.
I'm eager for the Dragon Age 3 PR cycle to start, because that's going to be hilarious.
I just find it funny that what you basically just said is, if you want to make that game, stop making RPGs and start making Uncharted.
Pretty much, yeah. Pretty much. That's what they've been wanting to make, and it's kind of obvious if you take a look at Mass Effect 2, yeah.
Because it seems like there's a lot of people in the video game industry right now, and maybe I'll get into this when I start talking about Catherine and El Shaddai, who desperately want to make movies.
Yep.
And only kind of want to make games.
And I think that's why the whole like Uncharted genre, I guess we can call it genre, because so much stuff about it, but the whole Uncharted template is so popular right now, because they can really hold your hand at every step of the way and make you think you're actually playing like a video game and you have some kind of agency. But, you know, the way Uncharted is, they'll actually show you, like, every handhold you got, right?
I find it amazing that Bulletstorm actually rewarded you for pressing a button to look at stuff.
With an achievement?
Right. No, you get experience from looking at things.
Oh, okay.
But generally there's, like, a cost reward scenario to that, because you're being shot at most of the time.
I never saw a downside to hitting that button as fast as humanly possible.
Yeah. Right, but holding on to it is the big issue. Because if you're being shot at, you can't just keep staring at the thing glowing in the sky.
I guess they kind of took that from, like, Metro Prime with the scanning, if you just, like, sit there and stare at something while it's trying to kill you, if you miss it. But in Metro Prime actually, like, it has some element of danger.
Well, this changes to a different camera angle and does a big cinematic set piece when you do that. I don't need that.
I was playing game, but I can't remember what it was. It just, like, it would say, press X to look at. And you'd do it, but it wouldn't show you what it is you're looking at. It would just adjust the camera ever so slightly.
So you had to kind of already be looking at it?
Yeah. Why can't I remember what game this is? Because it was something I was playing in the last couple of days. Oh, well. Maybe it was Prince of Persia. I don't know.
It was probably Prince of Persia. Yeah. Anyway, that was Dragon Age 2. I did get hold of Space Marine. I haven't played any of it because it was $7.
Oh, it's so good.
Yeah, I've had that for a while. I just haven't played it.
Feel bad about not getting hold of the rest of the Dawn of War series because, you know, it's Relic and you want to discuss the business, but I really don't like real-time strategy games. Sorry, guys.
Yep.
But
me neither. Let's
take. I wish I could buy some other stuff because there's no Steam sale.
Let's break.
Let's break.
Break.
We'll get with Matt and Brian afterwards.
Walking Dead.
None of us have chicken.
Nope.
All right, so what have you been playing, Brian?
I've been playing King of Tokyo.
What the hell is
not
that?
It's not a computer or video game. It is a board game.
Get out. Get off of my podcast.
Get out. So it's a board game that I saw recommended a while ago, but it's been, I guess, out of print for a while, and it just got a reprint with some upgrades, like engraved dice and stuff. But so anyways, as you might be able to determine from the name of the game, King of Tokyo, it's a game about battling giant monsters against each other. Monsters like Gigazor, who is a giant reptile. The King, who's a giant ape. Alienoid, Cyber Bunny. Seems kind of out of place, Cyber Bunny does. But anyways, the Kraken.
Cyber Bunny also giant, or is he actually just
bunny? It's a tiny bunny piloting a giant mech.
Excellent, excellent. Yes. Good work. Okay.
So it plays sort of like King of the Hill. There's a very, basically the most simple board you can think of. It's a board that has two spots on it, Tokyo and Tokyo Bay. And unless you have five or six people, you don't even use one of those spots.
Okay.
And aside from look, all these monsters are exactly the same. There's nothing at the moment that differentiates them. It's just your preference on who it is. Although there is going to be an expansion later that adds some sense. I should mention that this game was designed by Richard Garfield.
The guy Anyone? Who plays Spider-Man?
No.
The guy who invented Magic the Gathering.
The guy who, right, exactly, who designed Magic the Gathering. And it's published by a French company called Aiello, which is a really weird fit. I don't know, maybe he's married to someone who works there or something. I don't know. But so it was designed by Richard Garfield. Pretty simple, nice mechanics. And you can win by either eliminating the competition by, attacking them and hurting them, or by gaining victory points. So all the little profile cards for the monsters have a little health dial and a victory point dial. And you can, of course, get them by the... But anyways, the game plays out, there are six very big dice. Well, not very big. They're just super-sized, appropriate for the game itself. And the dice have a couple things. They have a claw, which attacks people, a heart, which you can use to heal, an electricity thing, which you can use for energy cubes, which are basically currency for buying cards, extra powers, and then there are numbers which you can use for earning victory points. But anyways, so you can get extra powers like extra head, which gives you an extra dice.
Oh my.
Yeah, they're all very, very kind of, I don't know if campy is the right word. I'm opening them up the box right now to flip through some of these cards.
So you should always be trying to get the extra head.
Yes, you always want the extra head. I'm going to just flip through some of these right now. Plot twist. You can change one die at anything. Vast storm, psychic probe, commuter train, evacuation orders, giant brain, metamorph. So a lot of really neat kind of powers that you can get by earning these energy cubes. But anyways, I mean, the game is a pretty short play time, like half an hour. And it's really good. It's really, really fun. Your turn plays out, like you roll the dice three times. So you can basically, pick and choose which dice you want on each roll as you go through each of them, and then do what you need to do. But it plays out interestingly because if you are the King of Tokyo in the middle there, everyone who's not in there is attacking you. They can't attack each other. They are focused on attacking you. So that adds in some sort of the balance. But yeah, so I've been playing that with my wife, and I got a chance. Actually, my mom played a game with us when they came up because they lost power in this crazy storm the East Coast had recently.
All right. Yeah.
Yeah. So her and my brother came up, and they played a game with me, and yeah, really good.
How'd your child do?
He did fine. He was born in like a super tornado warning time, so he was fine. He slept right through.
You missed the chance to name him Jumpin' Jack Flash.
Jumpin' Jack Flash. God, no. Fuck that song, man. So that's, I've been playing that, and it's really good. I highly recommend it. Again, it's got a short play time, because I talked about, obviously, about Arkham Horror, which is a game that has, like, a, you know, 2-hour play time. And I've been looking for some kind of shorter play time games that are also maybe a little simpler that I might be able to play with my son someday. So, highly recommended.
So naturally, like, horrible, like, games of Cthulhu, like, madness. This is what you need to...
Right. Oh, he'll get there eventually. I'm looking forward to Baby's First Arkham, or Baby's First Cthulhu, whatever you want to call it. But other than that, I've been playing, you know, the usual Diablo a bit. I'm getting a little bit sleepy at it right now. I'm not bored of it. It's just, like, at the point that I get to try to sit down and play some, it just, action RPGs put me to sleep. If I'm tired, they just put me right to sleep. It's crazy.
NotYourBeard.com review blurb. This game puts me to sleep.
But then I've also been playing Really Big Sky, which is a crazy side-scroller shoot-em-up type game that's on Steam, or sort of on Steam. I don't know if you can actually buy it. I got in one of the Humble Bundles. It's weird. I don't know. But anyways, and that's
are you sure you're playing this game? It sounds like a fever dream because you're not.
It's actually, it looks like a fever dream, man. You should, if you look up a video of it, it looks just like a fever dream. So that's what I've been playing. I don't know. I'm not really anticipating anything at the moment. I definitely want to play the new Spider-Man game when that comes out, and I've kind of been getting my Minecraft itch a bit. So we'll see where that goes. Yep. Matt's turn.
So this week, in a shocking turn of events, I've been playing something as opposed to playing nothing. Yeah. That's like the first time in like a month. So I happened upon a buy to get one free sale at GameStop, and you know, I was bored anyway earlier in the week, so I ended up picking up this week El Shaddai, Catherine, Aster's Wrath, and Child of Eden.
That's a lot of Japanese gaming.
And you played and beat all of them.
I got them all for my Gaijin box. Nice. So, no, I definitely did not play them all and beat them. I started in on El Shaddai, got through the second floor. That game confuses the hell out of me. And
what's
I don't
happening
just,
so far?
I just got through the level that was in the demo.
Okay.
It confuses me not because the story is weird. Like, I can deal with weird stories or right. even stories that are told out of sequence. That's not a big deal.
Right.
It's that the level structure confuses the hell out of me. I don't understand at all why they're as long as they are.
Right.
Or
they're pretty long.
Yeah, they're very long, but they're long because you walk down a hallway, enter a clearing, beat up three guys,
right.
walk down another hallway, enter a clearing, beat up three guys. Just getting into the tower with that multiple tier section.
Right.
I don't understand why there were so many tiers to go through when there was nothing on any of those tiers.
Yeah, that is a good point. It felt like maybe they intended for more stuff to be like on in that area, but then they realized, well, the only thing we're going to have these people do is fight these same three guys again. So they realized it was kind of tedious. They couldn't get rid of those areas because they're already part of the level.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's kind of frustrating.
I realize that some of it is that there's a lot of dialogue, and they want the dialogue to be part of a game you're playing, not just an unskippable cutscene, which
right.
in a way is, yeah, it's kind of admirable that that's what they want to have happen, but to make sure you don't get distracted by enemies while you're listening to this dialogue, you're walking down an empty corridor.
Well, it's one thing to have, like, all that dialogue in the game and all the backstory and stuff. The problem with that is the story is largely incoherent. So
yeah.
even if you're paying attention to it, you're not getting a whole heck of a lot out of it.
My biggest problem with the game so far, and this is just kind of, I'm one of those people who thinks that games should never be a war of attrition.
Sure.
You know, if you know what you're doing, you should be able to get through something unscathed, even if it takes you a lot of practice to get there.
Right. So not like that, Spec Ops: The Line.
Yeah, that being said, the antithesis of that is, of course, the unwinnable battle.
Sure.
The battle that, for story reasons, you will always lose. There have been at least 5 of those so far by the second level of El Shaddai.
Okay, there's something that's always confused me about that game. I wonder if those fights aren't in some way winnable. Because I've won one of them in the course of that game, and I can't figure out if I just got insanely lucky and, like, I was in the zone and I was able to defeat that guy, or if it was actually part of the storyline that I was able to beat him. Because I sort of wonder if you can beat him.
I'm pretty sure the ones I came up against were unbeatable in that every time I touched them, it hurt me.
Okay,
and every time they touched me, it hurt me. I could avoid their attacks for a good long time, but that didn't do any good. Like, yeah. Every single hit I landed on them bounced off their armor. So, no, I don't think those are necessarily winnable. I don't think they're intended to be winnable. And even if they are, they're still too much of a pain in the ass.
I have no problem with unwinnable fights as long as they make that clear. Like, there was a fight in Dragon's Dogma where I was just fighting tentacles for, 30 minutes.
God.
The only way that you would know to run away from this battle is if one of the pawns you have, in your party, you borrow them from other people. So if they've already done that, they will tell you to leave. But I didn't have anyone doing that, so it just sort of okay, but just keep fighting these things.
Yeah, you know...
So it was an unwinnable battle that you had to run away from?
Yep.
It wasn't something where you just lose it and the story continues?
Nope. If you lost it, you died. It was
that's
awesome.
That's idiotic.
Was there any unwinnable battles previous to this, so you could give me some kind of clue to expect it?
It was basically the first boss battle of the game.
Oh, that's good. That's good. Yeah, they did this crap in the 16-bit RPGs, and they never really stopped doing it. And they didn't realize we were kind of annoyed by this trope at that point in time.
What I hate are the battles that you can win, they're very strong, but you can win, and then when you win, it just pretends you lost.
Oh, yeah. God. Yeah, those.
I think Final Fantasy VI had a few of those.
Tales games are pretty infamous for those.
Final Fantasy, every Final Fantasy.
Yeah.
Every single one of them has at least a few of those.
I like what Final Fantasy 13 too does, is that you'll sometimes come across an unwinnable battle, and then after the game is over, you get a thing that lets you go back and change history, and has kicked the crap out of whatever you beat you before.
That's kind of cool. And then the other game, of course, I've been playing this week is Catherine. Catherine is also in the line of games that are almost more suited for movies.
I liked it, though. Despite that fact that it...
Well, Catherine has a big leg up by being a decent game in between all these cutscenes.
Well, and more than that, it was a decent story, which is what surprised me.
Yeah. It's a good interactive adventure. But the puzzle game in between is largely disconnected.
Yeah.
But that's okay, because both parts of it are good. Because
the game just started as an engine test for what I'm going to assume is Persona 5. And then they decided, let's just release this as a game. And for what its auspicious beginnings, I think it turned out pretty well.
Yeah. I think my biggest complaints with Catherine are super minor. That it's hard to turn around without also moving a space.
Yeah.
That's really the biggest issue I had. The only other issue I had was me being a moron, not realizing that you can drop down off a block and hang off the edge if there's not one immediately below it.
Right.
So I ended up being stuck for 20 minutes on a really obvious and simple problem. Because right before that, it tells you, you can, if you pull out a block onto the space where you're currently standing, you'll fall down and hang. And my stupid brain said, that must be the only way you're able to hang. it didn't dawn on me that there are other ways you could hang off a ledge. So that got me stuck for a good long time until I realized what a moron I was being. But other than that, I mean, that's a pretty good game so far, and I'm only 2 nights in.
Yeah, it gets a lot harder at some points, to the point where you have to start climbing around the back for some puzzles, and those are difficult.
That sounds like a pain in the ass, since it doesn't appear like you can actually put the camera back there.
You can tilt it slightly, just enough for you to see, but you're going to have to make some judgment calls.
Yeah, that sounds annoying.
Yeah.
I do find it funny that out of these games I bought, Child of Eden, you know, the sequel to Rez, is probably going to be the most interactive out of all of them.
Everything I hear about Asura's Wrath is that it's amazing. I want to get it. It's just, why is it still so much?
Well, that combined with... I picked up Asura's Wrath, Child of Eden, and Catherine at the same time because they're all kind of similarly expensive.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's the trick with the buy two get one free sale. You have to make sure that your third isn't a $5 game or else it's not worth doing.
Yeah, I've been trying to be responsible this summer. I'm like, okay, I'm not going to buy too many games. And I keep loading up the Amazon page for Theater Rhythm, the Final Fantasy Rhythm game. I'm like, yeah. No, I should be responsible and not get it. And I noticed I'm hovering over the pre-order now button.
So what's the pre-order bonus for Theater Rhythm?
A pen.
Oh, great.
That you can stick various characters onto the top of.
Oh.
Ooh.
That sounds lame.
It probably is, but I still want that game.
That's pretty sweet.
All right. Is there anything else you're playing, Matt, or?
That is it. Wait, no. No, I picked up the Mario Tennis game for 3DS.
How was that?
It's okay. Some of the returns that the computer players make are kind of unbelievable. And some of the shots they make are also similarly unbelievable. It has some major issues, like lob shots and drop shots. A lob is when you lob it over your opponent so it lands on the back line. Drop shot is where you drop it immediately in front of the net so they have to charge. Those are done by pressing B and A in sequence, opposite sequence, as opposed to just assigning another button.
So it's kind of like how doing forward spin and back spin in Mario Golf works.
I don't know.
Okay.
I've never played Mario Golf.
That's a shame.
But like you've got Y for regular shots, X for no spin power shots, A for overhead spin, B for underspin, then A, then B in sequence for drop shots, then B and A in sequence for lob shots. And when you have all of that and they're color-coded and you're supposed to do the opposite of the color-coding the person's shooting at you, it gets way too complicated sometimes. And you can return some of that stuff, but when you have to remember which sequence does lob or drop, it becomes impossible. Other than that, though, it's a lot of fun.
Yeah. So,
I saw Drive yesterday.
How was
finally.
That?
Finally, that movie was really fucking good. Y'all need to watch that. It's on Netflix Instant.
I've been watching Louie on Netflix Instant, and that is either like a brilliant comedy or like a really good drama with some comic undertones. I can't
it's
tell
so
which.
Good. It's so good.
That's the Louis C.K. Show,
yes.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Basically,
yeah, not the other Louis.
Yeah, Louis Anderson, who I'm pretty sure is dead.
Yeah, he has to be dead. He was a fat guy. If you listen to the Bill Simmons podcast, he had Louis C.K. on, and they spoke for an hour. And it's really cool. There's a bunch of sports stuff because Bill Simmons is like sports podcaster, but it's pretty funny. Lots of interesting stuff about like the comic scene when it's blowing up.
Oh, and best of luck to you, Mark, in your knee surgery tomorrow, man.
Yeah, a man is being paid a large sum of money to break my leg, and then presumably reset the leg, and then graft a dead man's tendon onto my knee. Supposedly, this won't take more than 90 minutes, and supposedly I won't feel anything. I am highly skeptical of
Will you be awake?
I don't know yet. When the doctor was talking about it, he said that I'd be put under a nerve block, and he swears I won't feel anything.
Okay.
I don't know about this because I'm highly resilient to pain medication.
They cut my wife open and pulled a baby out of her stomach, so she was like, it was
like
cool,
that,
man. Nothing
well,
happened.
They also had to put a feed into her spine to deliver medication
this
directly.
This is true. I'm just saying. I'm just saying.
Talk about spines. It's
we're just saying get as much morphine as you can.
It won't help. It won't help. I was in the hospital for like 12 hours with this thing last time, and they were just like, there's like liters of morphine like into my arm. It's like, we can't give you more painkillers because you'll die, and I could still feel everything. So and part of me doesn't want to actually be under for this procedure because I have this irrational fear that when you're under, you actually still feel everything. You just don't remember it when you wake up. Or what if they put me under and I can feel everything the whole time? I just can't react to it. It's just, I have this phobia and it's completely irrational because that's what phobias are. But God, I don't want to do this, but I have to do it. Yep. So
I just want to say good luck. I'm sure you'll be fine and it'll be okay. And if it improves your quality of life, then it's worth it.
Yeah, you're unlikely to wake up with like breasts or something.
That'd be kind of neat.
All right. Well, I gotta blast off again. But you guys keep doing your thing. I gotta go do baby things.
See you later, Mr. Belita.
Bye, everybody.
Adios.
Yep.
I love Sony.
And speaking of Sony, I guess we should probably talk about the Sony Gaikai thing.
Okay.
So like
Gaikai, which is cloud-based gaming service.
Yep, it is basically on live.
Okay.
And I mean, this has basically been known for weeks and weeks, but after E3, when people were like, hey, we know you guys are doing something, why don't you just admit it? Sony executives and Gaikai executives are like, no, we're not doing anything. This is just internet made up rumors. And yesterday they admitted they were.
So I wonder if Gaikai was aware of this at the point in time that they were like being targeted.
I'm sure that, I mean, it takes more than a couple of weeks for a buyout.
So what? So can we presume that Sony's actually going to do anything with this, or is it just going to die because of Sony's incompetence?
I'm guessing this is going to be a thing where they stream demos to the PS3 or PS4.
Right.
It would be funny if they use this to make the Vita even more like the Wii Remote, or Wii U Remote.
But they do it through the internet, so it's like incredibly convoluted and super expensive?
Well, it already has Remote Play, it just doesn't work. Like... I remember being really excited, like, oh yeah, I'm gonna play Tales of Graces when I'm just sitting in bed. I'm like, no, that game isn't supported. Journey's not supported. X isn't supported.
Well, the way it currently works with the Vita is there has to be a Vita version of the game. Like, it's not just a video stream, is it?
No, it's a video stream because PSP did it too. I remember playing Lair with my PSP.
Wow, that is.
But that has to be over Wi-Fi, right? Network.
Yep, it has to be over Wi-Fi, so there's lag.
Yeah,
I'm kind of surprised that the PS3 can pull off that sort of video encoding in real time. That's pretty intense.
I mean, it doesn't work very well, but
because like you have half of the controls.
Yeah, that was the big problem with Layer. That was for some reason this is possible pre-analog patch, so you can control it. You can pretty much just start it and just like fly into a mountain.
Great, awesome.
But they tried, I guess. They didn't just let it die.
So I wonder if Microsoft is going to counter this by buying out OnLive so that OnLive could still exist.
Their response was that cloud gaming is fundamental to what they do. Which I'm trying to think of an example of that, and all I can think of is that they have cloud saves that don't work very well.
I think Microsoft is more trying to say cloud gaming is essential to what we will be doing with Smart Glass.
Right, because I mean, it has to be done over the internet.
Yeah.
Unless they make it... I can't see a way that's possible for them to do it with all Windows 8 things on the next Xbox.
Well, I guess if...
Surface, maybe, but not everything.
I don't know. Do the tablets have, like, Bluetooth in them? Maybe the Xbox can stream it out via Bluetooth?
Some do.
Well, you can do this over local Wi-Fi as long as your router supports universal plug-and-play. You could use a protocol similar to DLNA for local network discovery.
Yeah, so I don't know how to do that, so I'm guessing most...
I mean, like, they could do this behind the scenes, and as long as your router is something that was made in the last 10 years, it'll support it.
Or is that something like this that Xbox Loop can just do on its own and you don't have to worry about it without the
It's kind of technologically speaking, it's kind of similar to the way that an Xbox or a PS3 can access a Windows 7 library and play videos. That stuff is handled behind the scenes by your router without you ever having to know how to set that up.
Interesting.
In theory, that would be a way to do Wi-Fi based streaming to Smart Glass. Whether or not they actually implement something like that, or if they make you go through Xbox Live servers, I don't know.
I can see that being a gold feature for some reason.
Well, yeah, because everything with the Xbox that isn't like just playing games is a gold feature.
Netflix recently revised their API to say that you can't charge a gateway to Netflix anymore.
So how is that going to work?
I assume that Microsoft is going to have to let it go.
Make it or maybe a Microsoft's feature. Just big enough that they can tell them to go to hell.
Yeah. Or Netflix is secretly crossing their fingers behind their back and saying, everybody except Microsoft.
That's possible, but I mean, if it's Netflix saying my way or the highway, I think Microsoft has to cede to them.
Well, Microsoft has, well, they have to because they want the 360 to be a...
Yeah, they want it to be a set-top box.
Yeah.
Which is what I use it for, usually.
Well, because there's no games coming out, so that's kind of what they have to do.
Well, I mean, I've become the dreaded casual gamer, I guess, because I just leave my 360 on in the morning and it keeps on the rest of the night.
See,
that's probably not good.
Yeah, I have a newer one. It's fine.
All right.
That's the sort of thing that sounds appealing for the Wii U.
Yeah.
That you wouldn't be leaving your console on all day, which most people wouldn't do anyway. You know, it'd be something you could just start up and start using immediately. It'd have to work on instant on, though.
I remember back in 2004, 2005, Iwata very specifically promised that Wii would have a sleep mode. Because you can't always just, you know, have time to find a save point and all that jazz. Or you don't want to go back to old things. And the actual Wii didn't end up having that. I'm guessing RAM concerns was probably the biggest issue. But why doesn't anyone have that? Because that sounds like a really useful feature. It's silly that that's limited to handhelds.
Yeah. Well, kind of, sort of. I mean, the Wii U at least now is going to have a home menu.
Right.
Like the 3DS home menu that you can get to from any game at any time.
But I
whether
I
or not
you put
the console
to
sleep.
I doubt it'll let me, like, switch games or things like that. Because the PSP Go actually managed that. You could create save states that were essentially invisible to you. They were just sleep mode, basically.
I don't think they'll do save states, because that's not sleep mode, then. That's hibernation.
That is hibernation, but, they were invisible. You never actually saw the files.
Yeah.
Well, if you can boot up fast enough, then it's not a huge deal. If it's, like, instantaneous, then... space in the same thing.
I don't know. I can see some situations like Walking Dead. I was talking about that earlier. You can't skip dialogue in that game. So when there was a point where people were inviting me to play Left 4 Dead, so I quit playing Walking Dead, too many zombie games, then right. I went back to it and it made me watch a minute or two of scenes. And a minute or two isn't going to kill me, but that's still kind of stupid. Like, why couldn't I have just stopped immediately where I was?
Yeah, save states are problematic, especially when you're talking about games that have network-based communications or the ability to update over the internet.
Right.
I mean, changing the .exe file behind the scenes while there's a save state pretty much invalidates any save state. But just the ability to pause a game, go to the home menu, and then put the system into some mode that consumes less power would be welcome.
Yeah.
Especially if these things are basically just going to be our media devices from this point forward. Yeah.
Or to run certain apps. Like, we already have it with the 3DS. You can pause a game and run the internet browser. It'd be nice if you could also, say, weigh in and Wii Fit or...
Yeah, if you could, like, launch Netflix instead. Like, the only thing with the 3DS is they reserved that top level of apps. Like, it's the internet browser and the notes and all that. And they're probably never going to be able to add more to that.
I can understand why. I mean, it's
well, you don't design an OS. You have to set that out from the beginning. But like, is
and
there
Netflix? Netflix is a kind of intensive thing for a handheld.
Yeah, but it's just—it's a shame that like that may be what Apple has the bigger benefit on. That in the way they revise their iPods and iPhones every year, they can make these changes if they need to, and no one's going to really care.
Yeah. I do kind of find that annoying about the Wii, is that compared to the 360 and the PS3, the Wii is a time capsule.
Mm-hmm.
It is almost exactly the way it was when they launched it, and that annoys the ever-loving crap out of me.
Like, the only thing I remember changing on the home menu is there's an SD card button.
Yeah. Oh, and they added the clock.
Did they add the clock?
Yeah.
I remember Sony did a firmware update that... the battery indicator went over the clock, and people freaked out.
I always thought that it would be helpful if all of the home menus for the various consoles displayed the time, and eventually the PS3 and the 360, well, Maybe they had it since launch, but the Wii never added that.
Yeah.
It would have been nice to have that on the home menu so you could find out what time it is.
Reminders and alarm clocks would make sense for those sort of things, too.
Yeah, or play timers with parental controls. Yeah.
Steam has all of that stuff. There's no reason.
Of course.
That, like... yeah. All right. Any other news that we need to get into, or?
Just speaking of Steam, the disturbing lack of the Steam Summer Sale, which I don't know. It's kind of weird. They're not addressing it, and I have to feel like the vendors are getting fucked on this because God knows we're expecting the sale, and you know sales across the board have to be down because people are expecting.
I think that's why they can't say anything about it, because then no one's going to buy anything. But the latest batch of coupons showed July 19th, I think, is when those coupons expire. And it makes sense that they're going to expire right before a Steam sale. So hopefully it's going to be middle of this month.
Well, yeah, but then it'll be like a month late. It's just weird that they're not...
It's still summer.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. It seems because Amazon has their own sale going right now. It just seems like Amazon prepared for this and they're kind of eating Steam's Valve's lunch right now.
I don't think that the revenue that the Steam sale is going to attract is going to be that much eaten up by Amazon.
Well, yeah, because it's kind of limited because it seems like the Amazon stuff is weirdly limited to EA games and 2K games and not a whole lot else.
Right. They have binary domain for $10 at some point soon, which is what I'm going to leap on.
Yeah, over the 4th, apparently. For some reason, just on the 4th, it'll be for $10.
Because so. Big Bow.
Big Bow. All
right. So
celebrate your independence by blowing up robots.
Intend to. And French robots.
Hell yeah.
All right. I've been watching a King of Monsters 2 arcade video since Brian was talking about the King of Monsters game.
Yeah. And it got to the point where it got to the Twin Towers. That's kind of uncomfortable.
All right. So we'll call it here, I guess, because I need to actually go edit this thing. So any final thoughts, guys, before we wrap this up?
No,
I'm excited that I'm finally figuring out how to watch a baby and play games again, because that's a tough thing to juggle.
Well, enjoy it now, because once they get old enough to bother you during playing games, then it's over.
I'm just super considering... impressed that all three of you have not managed to lose your child yet. So.
They're relatively large, and they make noises, so they're easy to find. It's not like a cell phone. You can't. That's good, because you can't just call the baby with your home phone.
1-800-DIAL-MY-BABY.
And it starts crying in the other room. Oh, that's where you are!
Under this pile of clothes.
No, I think I'm going to hit a sweet spot soon where she's actually sleeping at night when I normally play games, as opposed to just waking up every couple hours.
Oh, but, babies.
Yeah, but I'm glad to be playing things again.
All right, so we'll wrap it up here. We'll make fun of Wes and Brian for not showing up the whole time next week.
Pussies.
Yep. Them and their babies and jobs and stuff.
Yep.
We're all going to wish Mark a happy and hopeful surgery.
Oh, God. I'm going to die.
Yep.
I'm going to fucking die.
And next week, we will congratulate you on your mistaken breast implants.
No mistake involved, my man. No mistake involved.
The well, only mistake the is that you're on your back.
Oh, no. That was weird. Let's
better
cut this off now.
Back than your knee, I suppose.
Oh, God.
All right. We'll see you guys next week.
Bye.